And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Marquise Munson taking you through this Wednesday morning here in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. It's a lovely day out there, Joe. Looks great.
Very nice.
Very nice day.
Another steamer.
Another steamer, but that's okay. We're okay with that. Joe, you were on call yesterday, I guess is the best way to put it, for the Zoom press conference that Mike Vrabel had with the local media. And one of the things that was discussed were, of course, the world we're living in with the COVID-19 protocols that have to be taken into account. And the Titans have put their plan together that's been approved by the NFL. What were kind of some of your takeaways from the COVID-19 procedures that were asked about yesterday of Mike Vrabel and his responses?
Yeah, I had this idea to write something about, you know, different questions the Titans were going to face. The number one question, the most asked of him, and I'm sure the most asked of every single coach who did one of these yesterday, was stuff you're doing about COVID-19. And obviously there are a lot of other football questions, but I thought, first of all, he had a really interesting quote. I think it was Gentry Essas who asked him about just the whole idea of, hey, these guys come into work, then they leave. What are you doing? And one interesting quote Vrabel had was, quote, "I've learned you can't control people. You have to try to influence them the best you can." Basically counting on guys to be professional and, you know, stay home and be safe and not bring the virus into the facility. I can't believe that's totally comfortable for anyone in a position like Vrabel's in the NFL. But there is just a certain level of trust, and then you know the messaging will be frequent and
probably loud.
Yeah, forceful at times. But some of the stuff they're doing is interesting. They have, you know, they have the bubble, which was recently constructed for, you know, indoor practice. When it's raining outside or whatever, they can go in there and use the bubble. So now that's – they used to have their full team meetings in the auditorium. That's also where press conferences are when they're inside. So now – that's not a big enough room because you're distancing people. So now the big meetings, the team, offensive, defensive, they are in the bubble.
Which, and trust me, is big enough. It's big enough to put small army in.
That's a big bubble. So, and they have assigned seating. The lockers, they got 4-foot partitions between. So everybody's sort of in. It's like, I guess it's like an office building with cubicles now. Yeah. So it, not that you can't step outside from those partitions and bump into someone, but, you know, that's another safety measure. And then, like, everyone is going to different rooms. So now the offensive line goes to the auditorium. They used to be in just, like, a room. Now they're in the auditorium. You know, everybody's gone to bigger areas. So it's just stuff like that. Cleaning everything, using the whole facility for stuff, and right now they're in this time period of test, wait a day, test again, and see if they can get everybody going. Obviously, Isaiah Wilson is, one of two COVID-related news items yesterday. Anthony McKinney, undrafted free agent, opted out. He's the only Titan to opt out. And then Isaiah Wilson is on the COVID reserve list right now for an undetermined period of time.
And here's what Mike Vrabel had to say about their first-round pick, Isaiah Wilson, being on that list yesterday at his press conference.
I think the lines of scrimmage, Joe, I think are something that there's some carryover with at the from the college level, especially, you know, playing in a big conference or for a big school that carries over, because some of the, you know, the techniques may be somewhat different, but a lot of the blocking schemes are going to be similar. Now the names may be different or what we call it, but, you know, he'll have time to get out on the field. And I would say that the playbook probably isn't quite as large than, let's say, a wide receiver, the learning. You know, if I'm a right tackle, I know that I'm going to go out there and I'm going to line up next to the right guard and I'm going to have a split. But with a receiver, his alignment may be on either side. It may be inside. It may be outside. It's on top of the numbers. It's 2 yards inside the numbers. And so, you know, we're hopeful that we'll get him up to speed after seeing him in the Zoom meetings and now, you know, having him here.
Yeah, so that was actually – so I asked him just about Isaiah Wilson. I mean, you know, if I would have been smart, I would have said, hey, what's up with the COVID situation? Yeah. I just asked him in general about Isaiah Wilson and his, you know, progress during camp and the time he lost during the spring. At the end of the presser, Vrabel then said, by the way, news item, no questions, goodbye. So that's when we found out about Isaiah Wilson being on the COVID list.
But it sounds like from what Vrabel is saying there, though, that even though he's on this list, when it comes to the grand scheme of things, like, it's one thing if you're missing valuable, like, studying time and film time as a wide receiver because you're trying to learn an entire playbook. Like, that's less of a big deal as a right tackle where essentially there's more to it than this, but essentially your job is, hey, there's a guy in front of you, block him. Like, that's essentially what Vrabel is saying there. Like, you're less worried about a guy like that missing time from a mental standpoint than I think you would be a wide receiver or obviously a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it's more reps than anything.
Yeah.
There's still, you know, different protections. You're switching protections. Oh, you're gonna let him in, and they got a blitz coming. I mean,
sure.
There's different things in the run game that you have to learn. But no, that's, I mean, he made the comparison to receiver, and that's why they talk a lot in the NFL about how it's hard for rookie receivers to be great right away because that is a very complex position. A lot of it involving reading the defense. And adjusting based on what you see there. So, yeah, Isaiah Wilson, if he's in shape, if he gets back healthy from this and he's in shape and they get the reps going, then I think he can still certainly compete with Dennis Kelly there at right tackle.
And one of the exciting pieces that I was kind of looking forward to watch in the draft or coming out of the draft was Darrington Evans, who they selected in the third round. And you talk about kind of a change of pace back going from Derrick Henry to a guy who's smaller, a little bit shiftier in Evans. I think it could be interesting to watch this year, him being able to be that complementary piece to Derrick Henry. Mike Vrabel had some interesting comments about him as well yesterday. Here's what he said.
You know, there's a very good chance. We're never going to cut, Paul. We're never going to ask our offensive linemen to cut our defensive linemen in practice. Which sometimes during the game, their block and their assignment would tell them that they would have to. But do I think that Darrington Evans needs to get tackled? Yeah, probably at some point in time through training camp. You know, Darrington needs to get tackled because on September 15th, he's going to try to get hit and tackled really hard, as hard and as legally as the Broncos and the rest of the team that we play do. So, you know, that's something that I have to consider and look at. But we're not gonna cut players to the ground during training camp.
So it's interesting the way coaches are going to have to handle this situation because there are no preseason games, no live contact from that to get players like Darrington Evans ready, which you would typically have in a normal season. So how much contact once training camp does get fired up and things get somewhat back to normal are you going to have? Do you want to have? And how much contact does a guy like Evans need to have before you're comfortable putting him in an NFL game? Because, look, college football to the NFL is a big jump anyway. It's a pretty big jump from Appalachian State to being tackled by the Denver Broncos. So you're going to need to be able to prove, number one, that you can hold on the ball while you're taking hits that way. But also, like, just getting your body ready to take the beating that is playing the running back position in the NFL. Going to be really fascinating, not only with the Titans, but how coaches in general throughout the NFL handle the contact portion of this, given everything that's going on.
Yeah, Vrabel might go back to like 1990s Ohio State practices when he was a player.
Yeah.
You know, no, but seriously, like,
maybe he's going to be the one doing the tackling.
Yeah, I'm, you know,
he could.
He tends to get in there, but yeah, I think you probably do have to emphasize contact a little bit more, I guess. Sometimes during this whole process, you know, this is where fans lose out too, like on a guy like Darrington Evans with the no preseason games, because that's a guy who would in a couple of those games probably get like two quarters.
Oh yeah,
good quarters of work, and they're still going to look at Dalen Dawkins. They got some other undrafted guys on the roster, but Darrington Evans. I mean, I remember Derrick Henry's first preseason with the Titans, and you know he had a couple runs like, ooh, okay, look at this, yeah. Right? I mean, that's one of the cool things about preseason football games, even though they don't mean anything and a lot of times they're boring and it's bottom of the roster stuff. There's also some of these newcomers that fans get a glimpse at. The first glimpse they're going to get is that game at Denver, but that will make it interesting. Another thing that Vrabel talked about that I thought was interesting was the, you know, the routine of a preseason. I mean, you're going to fly on a day before a preseason game to the road, and then you're going to have your team meetings, you have your walkthroughs. team breakfast, all those things. You're going to have the day off after the preseason game. You build around game week like you do in a regular, you know, in a season to kind of get that routine, and there's none of that. So then you sort of you kind of have to manufacture some of that too. Yep. And also keep in mind, while I think there's going to have to be this emphasis on, you know, guys have got to get ready to play tackle football, you also need to keep that the rest portion of it in mind. So maybe it's more intense practices in some cases, followed by, you know, the breaks that they would have after a game.
Yeah, no question about it. Got a text in on the text line, says, if we lose running back two because of his smaller stature, what is the third and fourth running back situation look like with the Titans? So I guess if Evans goes out in training camp because he's a little bit smaller and gets hit or whatever, what does the third and fourth running back situation look like for the Titans? Although, as we're all aware, no running back other than Derrick Henry is going to be getting a ton of carries, but you're still going to need them at some point.
You're exactly. You know, and Darrington Evans is a solid. I mean, he's 5'10", 203.
Yeah, he's not fragile by any stance.
He's not Jose Altuve.
Yeah, exactly. There he goes again.
Oh, thank goodness we got a Jose Altuve shot in there. Little Jose Altuve. But Dalen Dawkins is a talented guy.
Yeah.
And honestly, I like Dalen Dawkins. Now, he's 5'7", 183.
He is small.
He's little, but he's talented. Like, I think that you look at that as a competition. When you draft a guy like Darrington Evans, where the Titans drafted him,
he's probably going to be your backup.
It's going to take a whole lot for him not to be your. But still, I mean, Dalen Dawkins is going to compete. And Kari Blasingame, who was a big pickup late in the season and kind of fullback role, but he caught the ball in the backfield. At Vanderbilt, he was a tailback. He ran the ball, and he gives you more of the big back look. They've got center Reese Perry from Louisville is in. Undrafted rookie Cameron Scarlett from Stanford. Those guys are both 6 foot, two in the two teens, so bigger guys there. So, but yeah, I mean, I think with Evans, if he is what they think he is and what they think they drafted, then both of those guys, Henry and Evans, are very important, and one of them needs to get ready for NFL contact.
When we come back, we talked about the NFL's top 100 list yesterday on the show. There's going to be a Tennessee Titan that finishes in the top 10. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel discussing the significance of Derrick Henry's re-signing with the Titans. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, before the break, we kind of threw it out there. You know, we were talking yesterday about the NFL top 100 list, and a Tennessee Titan is going to end up in the top 10 of said list. And our good friend Bob on Twitter has asked if that player is Brett Kern. It's not Brett Kern, although some people may laugh at that. Brett Kern's good, man.
Brett Kern
is
good.
I have made the argument that, not necessarily from a skill set standpoint, but from what they're asked to do in the NFL, I'm not sure that there's a better player in terms of what they're asked to do than Brett Kern.
Brett Kern's not on that list.
He's not on the list, though.
Not on the list at all.
He's got to be the best punter in the league.
Do you guys think that a punter would be on the top 100 list
ever?
No,
we're not.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Of course.
Really?
Yeah, field position, man.
I love punters.
It's all about that field position,
man. Hey, Brett Kern's incredible. You're right. And the thing is, Brett Kern, I didn't have the biggest leg in the league, so sometimes people look at, just like your
distance.
Average. Yeah. But his accuracy, like he is, if this were golf, he would have the best short game in golf. I mean, he's unbelievable. But no, Bob, it is not Brett Kern.
The player that is going to be in the top 10, as many of people may have guessed, is Derrick Henry. No surprise. I mean, I think everybody would assume that if there's going to be a Titans player in the top 10, it's going to be Derrick Henry. Where exactly he's going to be in the top 10, I don't know. But when you hear Derrick Henry, top 10 player in the National Football League, regardless of your position, what's your reaction to that, Joe Rexroad?
Well, that's a ton of respect. The Titans often talk about, and I think in a lot of cases have a point when they talk about it, disrespect or maybe not disrespect, but lack of respect, lack of attention for what they do from around the league. This is a big-time show of respect from players, and players vote on this, and so you keep that in mind. There are shortcomings with player voting on something like that. I mean, some of these players don't see some of the other guys at all. You know, NFC, AFC guys see each other every 4 years. I mean, it's not perfect, but this is a show of respect for Derrick Henry, and it's, I think it's a show of respect for the Titans to some extent, although there's some weird omissions on this list too. So,
but, no Kevin Byard on the list.
Yeah, I mean.
Surprising to me.
Yeah, you talked yesterday about Logan Ryan, but what, 60? Number 60?
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's high, but he was really good last year. And I get the respect for him, and I think recognition for him makes sense. But Kevin Byard, like Logan Ryan being 60, Kevin Byard not being on the list, to me, is a little bit wacky.
Yeah. If you look at this list and you look at Titans that are on this list, there's only two current Titans on this list.
And then the other two former ones.
And two formers. Yeah. Jarrell Casey at 71 and then Logan Ryan at 60. So it's kind of ridiculous. But, hey, I much rather Kevin Byard play as chip on my shoulder, Kevin Byard, than $70.5 million Kevin Byard. So, hey, it's good. It's good for him because it so it was like, hey, okay, you guys, all this hype around Jamal Adams, let me show you that I'm one of the best safeties in the league. So he has that opportunity.
Got a text on the text line. Speaking of Brett Kern, Ben texts in and says, Kern is only an 84 on the new Madden in terms of his player rating. I mean, that is disrespectful to the best punter in the game.
So my question to that then is, how many punters have a higher rating, and what are the ratings? I would like to know that. And I'm not going to pretend that I get Madden ratings other than, hey, if it's 1 to 99, then I guess that tells you something. I mean, 84 seems like a pretty good score. But, yeah, I mean, relative to punters, I guess I would think Brett Kern would be more like a 90-something.
Oh, yeah. Disrespectful is what that
there
is.
There it is. What's Derrick Henry's again? Do you know this?
I think he's
90-something,
he's
right?
He's 90. Yeah, he's in the 90s. I don't know exactly what it is. I think Mahomes was maybe the only 99.
Is he a 99?
Yeah, he's a 99. Which, I don't have much of a beef with that.
No.
Yeah, that's
not
cool.
Mahomes. Mahomes is a 99. Aaron Donald is obviously
okay, Aaron
a 99.
Donald, too. Yeah, yeah.
And then Christian McCaffrey, Michael Thomas, and Stephon Gilmore.
See, I don't know if I'd give Michael Thomas a 99.
No, 97. I don't know either. He's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
99, that's pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, too. Like, the different positions, and I don't know. Man, just give me Super Tecmo Bowl.
This new stuff is just too much for you.
People get so wrapped up in this.
They do. Players get wrapped up in it, too. Like,
oh,
they get
big time.
Legitimately mad when their rating is not as high as they think it should be.
Who was it that – was it last week someone went off, right?
Yeah, I don't remember who. I mean, Devontae Adams goes off all the time.
So he's mad about Madden ratings.
He's mad about Madden ratings, and he's mad about the NFL 100 list.
I mean, so he's got
– Now he's probably mad that he's the only wide receiver they have that can catch football.
Yeah, that Funchess – Funchess opted out. He's tweeting at Funchess.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as Derrick Henry is concerned, like, to me, this kind of underscores – and, look, we knew this anyway. This list, in the grand scheme of things, is not that big of a deal. But it underscores, I think, what people – view Derrick Henry as from a league-wide standpoint, which underscores to me the importance of getting that deal done. Because you're talking about, obviously, a player that's extremely important to what you do on the field, but the Titans just really haven't had guys like Derrick Henry walk through the door all that much that people consider universally a top 10 player in the league. Like, you know, when Eddie George was on and was at the top of his game, maybe. Steve McNair in his MVP year and maybe for a couple years around there, top 10 player in the league. But it hasn't happened a whole lot where they've had kind of the face of the franchise like this. So to me, that underscores even more the importance of the Titans being able to get that contract done with Derrick Henry.
Yeah, that's a good point. There haven't been – I mean, I think Chris Johnson had a couple years where he would have maybe been something like that, right in there. I mean, Vince Young was rookie of the year, but it wouldn't –
I don't know if he's ever top 10 in the league.
No, no. I mean, like Jarrell Casey was great. Delanie Walker was great when they were at their absolute best, but – not that. Yeah, so, I mean, I think Derrick Henry, there are guys who can be, you know, overhyped based on, I think, in some cases, postseason performances. So some may look at this and say, okay, everybody saw Derrick Henry in those playoff games, and so there's, like, an inflated view. But I just don't think it's inflated. I mean, that's what he's been now for the last 22 games, basically, of his career. And I think it is top 10 player. It's also respect for a running back. So even though Everyone talks about how you don't sign, you know, you don't pay a running back and they'll run out of gas and look at all these guys who got hurt. I'm going to point to Todd Gurley and the Rams when they were great and the Rams now that they're average. And what's the difference? It's Todd Gurley.
Yep.
So if you're the Titans, you got to feel good about having this guy at least for a couple more years. And what Vrabel said was interesting too. The contracts to trickle in, but he was a player.
Yeah, come on.
He knows how it gets. And I think this team clearly really wanted Derrick Henry to get that deal and was very excited he did. And I'm not saying it would have been mutiny if he didn't get it, but I just think it's a happier work environment with Derrick Henry on a long-term deal.
Also, Joe, I'm sure you saw this yesterday, but Joey Bosa got him some money yesterday. The Chargers and Joey Bosa reached an agreement on a 5-year deal. That's $135 million. It's a league record in terms of he had a $78 million fully guaranteed at signing and $102 million guaranteed overall, which is a new NFL record for a defensive player. And when you look at Joey Bosa and what he means to the Chargers, not all that surprising. I mean, you knew he was going to get paid, and, man, that's a heck of a deal for Joey Bosa.
Great player. That is a lot of guaranteed money. For a guy who, you know, has had some injuries, but man, that's a big time. So that's $2 million more in guaranteed money than Miles Garrett. So it's one of those. All right, a little bit more than the last guy. I want to be number one. I don't know. Like, I don't know who's gonna top him. Maybe I'm not thinking of someone right now, but
maybe
his brother.
Nick Bosa,
the other Bosa.
They can wait a while.
But there's another one. T.J. Watt too.
Yeah,
T.J. Watt is pretty good. So he may be the next guy to get around that same.
You think he'll get that kind of money? I mean, he's a really good player.
Yeah, I think he will.
Yeah,
I think he will.
Okay,
I think there's a good chance.
Nick might be better than Joey.
Nick is pretty good.
I know Nick is better than Joey.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, the hard part with the 49ers, though, is like they were so loaded all around up front that, you know, how much was last year other guys helping making it easier for him? You know what I mean?
Got some outside noise coming on.
I don't know. Are there ghosts in the studio?
It could be, man. Look, this is what happens when you have such an honest show. People try to mess with you, but we're pros. We can handle this. That's fine. When we come back, another pro we're bringing into the fold, our good friend Brooks Bratton from NashvillePredators.com and the Predators official podcast. We'll talk to him next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrow taking you through this Wednesday morning. Looking forward to talking to Brooks Bratton of the Predators official podcast here in just a few minutes. Joe, we discovered the root of the noises that were happening at the end of the last segment. It was your fault.
I'm sorry. Also, I did almost start talking before hitting the microphone button, but I corrected myself. So I hope that makes up for it. But yeah, normally my laptop's on mute, and I don't know why it wasn't. Maybe, you know what? Actually, maybe because of the variable Zoom call yesterday. Usually it's like constantly on mute. And yeah, that was one of those pop-up videos that a website I won't name, but an NFL website, and I'm sorry.
It's okay.
No free pub.
It's okay. I'm not free pubbing that website.
Unless it's the
do a lot of aggregating. That's right. A lot of aggregating on that website.
Well, we bring in our good friend Brooks Bratton, who is up in the bubble in Edmonton with the Nashville Predators. Brooksy, what's going on, my man?
Hey, Robbie, it's good to talk to you guys. As you said, from the bubble here in Edmonton, it's quite an experience I'm living right now.
I would imagine it is. What has bubble life been like for you so far?
Honestly, you know what? The first thing that comes to mind is just how safe it really does feel. I mean, everybody from our organization to the NHL to the folks here at Rogers Place, the arena in Edmonton, I mean, everybody has really gone above and beyond, and it's just been really impressive how organized everything is, like I said, how safe everything is, and it's clearly been a massive undertaking, and no detail has been overlooked, and player safety comes first, which it should be, and in talking to a lot of the guys as well, I don't know that there's a single person here who hasn't been impressed with everything. I don't know that anybody really knew what to expect coming in, and I think there was maybe still some worry or some hesitation as to how things were going to go. That has all but been evaporated at this point. It's really been a good experience so far, and we're excited to play a game tomorrow.
So within the bubble, Brooks, so are you at the J-Dub then? JW Marriott?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Which is obviously a very nice place.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, decent. Decent. A little bit better than a Fairfield. So give us a lay of the land. Like, I know John Hines talked the other day about the free Tim Hortons, which immediately made me jealous. But, like, so a bunch of different restaurants are open, and you got, like, an outdoor area. You know, when you walk around, how much does it feel, I guess, like you're not in a bubble?
Yeah, I mean, it does to a point, and one of the things, like you mentioned the restaurants, so the league has really stressed that teams kind of stay within their own group for these first 5 days here. So I suppose Friday will be the fifth day. We arrived on Sunday. But that has really been just a point of staying together in your group, just in case there is any sort of issue with testing or anything were to come up. So there really aren't a whole lot of restaurants open. Like, for example, we as a team have just been having breakfast, lunch, and dinner all in the same meal room here in the hotel together. And once those first 5 days get out of the way, then you'll start to see more of the restaurants in the hotel. I think the hotel's got 2, 3, 4 restaurants maybe. There's places you can walk over to Roger's place and go. There's a couple of other hotels with some restaurants, and then you can also order out from different restaurants. They can deliver. You can order room service. So there's a bunch of options like that. And you're right. I mean, I would say the thing that really kind of does make it feel like a bubble and reminds you of the times that we're in is you can't go anywhere without your mask and without your credential. The moment you leave your hotel room, you've got to have your mask on and you've got to have your credential with you. To just prove that you're supposed to be there, right? So it's definitely a streamlined process, but at the same time, it still is a reminder that, you know, you are getting tested every day, you are having temperature checks and screening checks and that sort of thing. But when you're just hanging out and you're kind of around, it does kind of feel like just a regular old road trip in a sense.
Brooks Bratton from NashvillePredators.com and the Preds official podcast on with us now on Morning Drive. And Brooks, we were talking earlier just about the format of this tournament that the Predators are about to embark on. And I kind of made the point that I feel that the Predators are probably more dangerous going into this tournament than I feel like they would have otherwise been heading into the Stanley Cup playoffs had the season not paused. Do you agree or disagree with that statement? And how dangerous do you think this group is heading into this tournament?
Well, Robbie, I think the one thing that stands out to me is there are a lot of players on this team who did not like their numbers or the way that they played in the regular season. Not to say that anybody had ridiculously poor numbers, but there are a lot of guys who know that they can play better, and they'd be the first to tell you, mainly a lot of the guys in that top six forward group. And I don't think there's a single one of them who didn't come back into camp just completely ready to go. There's a lot of guys who are looking at this as a fresh start. But at the same time, the Predators, as if you can recall all the way back to March, it seems like years ago, but they were on a bit of a run. They were liking the way that they were playing more often than not as we got into March there. And so there is still a little bit of confidence from that, knowing that they felt like they were on the up as far as their overall play was concerned. But again, there are a lot of guys on this team who want to play better, who know that they can play better. The Johansson line, the Jofa line's been back together in camp. They've looked great. Matt Duchene has centered Mikhail Granlund and Kyle Turris. They've had some nice plays in a couple of scrimmages last week in Predators training camp. And they've looked good in the couple of days in practice up here. So I think that's the biggest thing for me is there's a lot of guys on this team who feel like they have something to prove right now, and that's a very good sign.
We were talking earlier, Brooks, about John Hines and, you know, the difference between coming in mid-season, scrambling to try to learn a team, and meanwhile get a team into playoff contention and all the decisions you have to make on the fly, and now this pause or the chance to learn the team and maybe install more of you what you want to do, from your perspective, do you see a difference in that way, maybe a difference in style or some wrinkles that he's added that fans might see, you know, when this team resumes playing here?
Yeah, I think so. And Ryan Johansson said that probably a week ago. He was asked about just the comfort level of where they are with systems and the teachings that Hines has tried to instill and that sort of thing. And Johansson said that he feels way more comfortable than he did in the regular season. Not to say that the Predators were lost. It's just a fact of when a new head coach comes in, it's a totally different style. I mean, you guys remember he was hired the day of a game. And that first game was really, he was just kind of observing.
Yeah.
And you had some practice days, but it's so tough in the middle of a season to try to really implement these large concepts. So I think in the regular season, they got the base of it down, and then they were able to come back in training camp and say, okay, we have this base already. Now we're going to build upon it. Now we're going to instill these little nuances and some different ideas in all different areas of the ice. And Coach Hines was saying the other day that we are really getting back to our identity and the way that we want to play. And that's with a lot of speed. This is a team that is still going to want to play fast, is still going to want to be on the offense, but also be more defensively responsible in their own end. So I think it's a good mix of that. And I think everybody's just really anxious to play in that exhibition game tomorrow against Dallas, because even though it doesn't mean anything in the standings, it still means a whole heck of a lot, right? You never want to lose a game, and you don't want to lose your first game up here. But more importantly, I think they want to see what they have. It's you can only scrimmage and practice against each other so much. You've really got to try to get out there against another team and see what you've got. So I know all the guys are really excited to do that. It's been, as you guys know, it's been 4.5 months since we had an actual game. So they're really excited to get going.
Brooks, obviously a lot of people have made a big deal about the Jofa line getting back together. Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson. Number one, how do you think they've looked in their time together in training camp and these practices? And what kind of an opportunity do you think those guys have to get back to playing to the level that we've grown accustomed while those three have been together?
Well, in the last scrimmage in Bridgestone Arena back in Nashville there last week, Philip Forsberg had a couple of pretty spectacular feeds to Victor Arvidsson for a couple of goals in that scrimmage. Now, that's just a scrimmage, but it's nice to see that they certainly haven't forgotten how to play with each other. And I think every member of that line had remarked that the chemistry just comes right back. When you've had the success that they have had as a trio in previous seasons, I don't know that you ever lose that. And I also think something important to mention is that John Hines really, he talked to all of his players over the break, of course, but I think he really got to know them as people and what makes them tick. And I think that was especially true for some of his top players, like a Ryan Johansson, like a Philip Forsberg. And his whole thing coming into training camp was, let's go with lines, let's go with trios and defensive pairings that have had success before. And you guys know, I mean, we've seen a virtually unchanged lineup from day one of training camp. And that was certainly by design to say, you know, we've only got 2 weeks to get ready here. Let's not try to reinvent the wheel. We're going to go with guys who we know can play together. We know have had chemistry together before. The Jofa line, of course, and again, as I mentioned earlier, the Duchesne line, he and Mikael Granlund have chemistry together. Kyle Turris has slotted really nicely along with them. The Nick Bonino line with Craig Smith and Rocco Grimaldi were, quite honestly, probably Nashville's best and most consistent line throughout the regular season. And then the defensive pairings, at least in the top four, you know, you've got Yossi Ellis and then Ekholm and Fabro. So it's really just go back to what you know and what works. And that's kind of been the theme here in training camp, is let's stick together. Let's find that chemistry pretty much instantly. And I would argue that the Jofa line has certainly found that. I'm really curious, because I think they've done a lot of good stuff over the last 2 weeks.
How do you see the goaltending situation, Brooks? And do you think tomorrow will the exhibition game with Dallas will sort of shed light on where that's headed?
Well, I mean, that's been the big question all throughout camp, right, is who's going to start game one against Arizona. And as of yesterday, when Coach Hines was asked about it, he said, we still had not made that decision yet as of yesterday morning as to how they would utilize the goaltenders in the game against Dallas. I would think it would be probably pretty close to a split, if not a first and second period for one, the third period for the other. But in watching, for example, Toronto and Montreal yesterday, I believe Carey Price and Frederik Andersen were in there for the entire game for both sides. I don't see Nashville doing that. And John Hines has said it before, we're going to need both goaltenders in this postseason. No matter who starts, if you're going to make a deep run, at some point you're going to need both goaltenders. So I think it's important to get a game in there for both of them. But I mean, it's a heck of a decision. We all know how well Eustace Saros was playing before the pause there. He had a team record or a personal record in the second best shutout streak in franchise history. He went 2.5 games essentially without allowing a goal. And so if you want to look at it from that point, but then you could also look at it from the standpoint of Pekka-Rinne, who obviously is the top goaltender in franchise history and has traditionally started the season well. And this 4-month pause has essentially been the length of an off season. So it's a tough decision to make. I don't know that it's been made yet, and I honestly don't know that we're going to know who is starting against Arizona in game one until somebody leads the team out for warm-ups. I really think that that's when we're going to find out eventually.
Brooks Bratton from NashvillePredators.com and the Preds official podcast has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Brooksy, thanks for joining us, my friend. Hope you continue to enjoy bubble life, and thank God hockey's coming back.
Thanks very much, guys. It was a pleasure.
Appreciate it. We'll continue to react to a little bit of what Brooks had to say there and get into some more Preds talk on the other side of the break. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. That's a great song Munson's put out there. Beer for my horses.
I was going to say, it's beer for horses? I didn't know that. I just heard you talking about it earlier. Yeah.
Nah, it's for my horses.
For my horses.
My horses.
Toby Keith,
Joe,
Willie Nelson. Not just any horses.
Not your horses.
One of the greatest country
horses.
Songs ever.
Wait, who is it? It's Willie Nelson and
Toby Keith. It's one of the greatest country songs of all time,
in my
opinion.
I mean, you got to love Willie Nelson.
Yeah.
Right?
Who doesn't?
Yeah. Everybody's got to love Willie Nelson.
Thanks to Brooks Bratton for joining us in the last segment. Joe, I look at what's going on right now, and we've talked so much about the Preds goaltending situation. I think there is something to read into tomorrow with whatever happens in the Dallas game. And it's not even necessarily who starts it, even though I think that's probably the number one indicator. But like if Eustace Saros goes out and plays two periods and Pekka plays one, wouldn't that still, at least to me, tell me that Eustace Saros is probably the leader in the clubhouse to start game one against Arizona just because, you know, you're giving him two periods to kind of get ready for the game on Sunday? Like, I think we are going to have at least a slight tell tomorrow in their game against Dallas.
I agree. I mean, I guess if you try to split it exactly in half and make the switch halfway through the second period so that you're not tipping your hand, then I guess you could.
I mean, they do that a lot in exhibition games normally where they'll play pretty much exactly half. But I just don't. I don't think that's the way to go tomorrow. I think you gotta get ready for Sunday, man. Like your goalie's got to be ready to play.
Yeah, exactly. Like whoever you have as your starter, I think should get two periods
at least,
if not the whole game.
Yeah,
like Brooks said, you know, Toronto, Montreal, no question who's in goal for them. But it's like get them the whole game. You got time to rest before you actually start this tournament. So I agree. I think it'll be a tell, and I think. I think that the decision, I don't know if it's been made for a long time, but I'd say it's been made by now.
Could be. Yeah, certainly could be. I do believe it's close. Like, I do believe, look, at the end of the day, if push comes to shove, I think that team and that coaching staff has full confidence in both goalies. I really do. I think they believe that Saros can get the job done, and I think they also believe a rested, refreshed, focused Pekka-Rinne, he's still got enough left in the tank to get the job done. I believe that. But I also believe you're at least leaning one way at this point. At least I would be. Now, I can't speak for John Hines. I'm leaning one way at this point. So we'll see whether or not we get a tell tomorrow in their exhibition game against Dallas. We're going to have Dari Noka of the SEC Network join us at 9 o'clock. But we got a text in on the text line, Joe, from a topic we were talking about with Derrick Henry and the NFL 100. And it says the top 100 list is very wacky. Byard should easily be on there before both Casey and Ryan. And another small market team that gets disrespected is the Colts. For a guy that is the most dominant at his position and maybe the most dominant offensive lineman in the league, Quentin Nelson should be in the top 20. So a lot of good points raised there. This top NFL 100 list, there are parts of it I agree with, but some of it, I'm just like, are y'all looking at?
This is why I like lists. We just get to argue. Oh, he should be higher. He should be lower.
Like Logan Ryan is not the 60th best player in the NFL. I'm sorry. He's just not.
But, I mean, the disrespect to Byard, that's
ridiculous.
That's 2 years in a row where, well, I think he had it in 2018 or 19.
Yeah.
So
2 years ago he made it. Is that
yeah,
right?
So 2 years ago he made it. So I don't know what.
Like, has he gotten worse? No.
You know what? It's just like coaches voting in the coaches poll in college football. They know more about football than everybody. So, like, these players may know players well, but they don't sit there and study everyone. These coaches don't look at other games. They play their game and they study their upcoming opponent. And they might know their league pretty well. They shouldn't be voting on that stuff, right?
No.
I mean, it's usually the SIDs who vote anyway. So these players, like you said, I think off the air, there's a popularity contest aspect to it. And there's just some guys don't even see other players that are, you know, that are part of this that have to be ranked high. I mean, where was Quentin Nelson, by the way?
I don't know. I have to look. I'm sure he was very close to 20.
I mean, I don't necessarily agree that he's got to be top 20, but
he's a really good player.
He's very good.
Yeah. Well, and I would say, look, this is why you hear all the time, like, arguments for NBA that the players should vote on the MVP and, like, the NFL, the players should vote on all these things. This list is a perfect example of why a lot of times players have no idea what they're talking about. Like, they're really good at their sport, and they're very good, and they know more about football than I could ever know. But sometimes these lists that they put together is nothing else but a popularity contest. There's almost zero effort involved putting it into it.
It's it's basically like media members who try to pretend to know the Titans, even though they only watch the Patriots and the Ravens game.
Exactly.
And then that's how they judge the Titans based off of that.
Ooh, they played the Patriots.
Oh, Ryan Tannehill doesn't really throw the ball that well. I'm like,
yeah, 90 yards.
Like, did you watch other games or did you just watch that one?
Yeah.
Like, so it's the same thing. It's, you know, you get a little sample size of someone, and that's kind of how you base your opinion on it. So, but I mean, to say, and this is for us three who watched the Titans all year, you cannot tell me that Kevin Byard, out of 100 people in this league, is not one of those 100.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. Now, Keenan Allen, he can argue about his ranking and wanting to be the best wide receiver. I watch Keenan Allen play football. He's not better than Tyreek Hill. I watch Tyreek Hill play football, and he's really good. And he's really fast. He's not better than Mike Evans. I saw Mike Evans torch the Titans. So it's just sometimes people just don't watch every game and don't know.
But you know what, to that point, you know, yeah, we watch Mike Evans torch the Titans. Now, like, Mike Evans is great, period, after week. But sometimes you will see, as a media member, you'll see something. I mean, look, I'll go back to covering Michigan State at Oregon in 2014, and I was like, okay, I know my Heisman vote right now. Marcus Mariota destroyed them, and I'm like, but he's winning the Heisman from what he did. Now, that was the right vote, okay? But you can be influenced to have wrong picks on that stuff, too.
Sure.
I'm looking, you know, so there's never a perfect group. I do think media members are better because they at least should be watching other stuff. You're right. Not enough people watch the Titans, for example. But, you know, they should be keeping an eye on more things. I mean, if you cover a team, you're going to be in that stadium in a normal year watching the team you cover, who they play. But you should at least be trying to keep informed. Players don't. Why do you care? You're looking at film of who you are playing this next week. I mean, it's not – and some of them may get into it. They may play fantasy football and be really informed, and some may not, and some just don't like a guy and don't vote for him because they don't like the guy. And that's where media should be separated too.
College,
we shouldn't take personal stuff in.
For college, it's a lot different for me, especially when it comes to like a Heisman vote, because it's very biased when it comes to if you're a local media member in – Alabama or in Texas or Oklahoma, and one of your guys that you cover is in that race, you're going to eventually vote for that person.
If you're a homer.
Yeah, if you're a homer. Like, I strongly believe, like, and people gave me flack for this when I did live in Tuscaloosa, that Kyler Murray deserved the Heisman because Kyler Murray was really good.
Yeah.
And I watched Oklahoma football. And that, yeah, I watched Alabama football and watched Tua and watched him play every single game. But to watch Kyler Murray do what he did was incredible, and he deserved the Heisman, and he got it for that reason, and a lot of people were frustrated at that because, you know, Tua didn't get it. And then there was a dude in that same ballot voted for Jonathan Taylor as a first place pick. So it's just sometimes when it's like local media, it's very biased to I only focus on this one person. So I'm not saying Kevin Byard should be on this list because we cover the Titans. I'm saying Kevin Byard should be on this list because if you rank the top five safeties in the league, I'm pretty sure Kevin Byard's on that list.
What percentage of Alabama media is just straight up homer?
You want honest opinion?
Yes. No.
Honest opinion.
Absolutely. And name names if you can.
I can't name names because I used to work with some of them. So I will say probably about a good solid 80%.
80%. Wow. Even higher than I said.
But there's a couple of them. Like I will name some of the ones that are like really good about it. Aaron Suttles is one of them. Yep. You know, you work with Aaron Suttles at The Athletic.
My guy Big House, he's not a homer.
Who?
Casa Grande.
Oh yeah, Casa Grande, he's definitely not a homer. But the rest,
everybody else,
rest of you guys.
I'm not gonna name names, but everybody other knows too.
Rest of you guys. I mean, there's a few others for sure, but you know, there's a few that are just Alabama, Alabama, Alabama. Yeah. I would have voted for Jalen for the Heisman. I would have voted for John Parker Wilson for the Heisman. No, you wouldn't have. Like, let's knock it off here. And that's how it is.
College football is a homer media crew.
Breeding ground, man.
Yeah. Who's the guy from Kentucky you love so much?
Matt Jones, man.
Matt. Oh, who wears all his Kentucky gear to everything?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, like, it's like even if you were just a Kentucky fan, it's embarrassing. Like, dude, you have, like, UK shoes on and stuff. Like, it's one thing to, like, yeah, you wear a UK hat, but he's on press row with, like, I mean, he's got, like, his socks. It's like, dude, come on.
When we come back, Dari Noka from the SEC Network will join us. Looking forward to that conversation. That's next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.